Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN. We was mentioning this a little bit earlier tonight. We're heading back to work, at least it seems like we are. You know, we'll see where everything goes, but we're heading back to work. Kids are hopefully heading back to school. A lot of people in the last 18 months decided, I'm stuck at home. It's time to get a puppy. It's time to get an animal in this house. And maybe they didn't think that completely through. It's a beautiful thing to have, of course, for anyone. You've certainly heard our Steve Dale talk about pets all the time here on WGN Radio, including 5:30 to 6 a.m. on Sunday mornings every weekend. But now that people are starting to get back to a little more normal life, it seems that more and more people are realizing, maybe I didn't fully think through what I was doing. Now this dog does not want to be left at home. Maybe you didn't train the dog properly. What can we do to make sure as life gets back to normal, we don't make those animals that we brought into our family suffer or cause problems in the house? Joining us on the phone right now is Laura Monaco Torelli. She's a famed Chicago area dog trainer. She's the founder and director of Animal Behavior Training Concepts. Hey, Laura, how are you?
I'm well, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it. Is this sound right? I saw an article in the Journal, saw an article in the New York Times or Washington Post. It seems that more and more we're hearing the popular press jump on the bandwagon of, we adopted all these puppies, but now people are getting back to a normal life and maybe they weren't fully prepared for this. Are you dealing with this a lot at work too?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, thank you so much for inviting me to join you to discuss this very important topic this evening as well. Because when we look at it through this lens, and, you know, part of my role is being a support team for these very families and the pets, you know, it could be cats too. You know, they rescued a cat or a puppy, a dog. You know, this is a real struggle. And so my job is to help be empathetic and look at it through the family's perspective and then, of course, share the laws of learning and behavior science as to why they're seeing the behavior that they might be observing with their rescue dog at this time.
Okay, real quick before we get into it, because I know the bulk of our conversation is going to be about dogs. Can cats have trouble? We think of cats as being these solitary creatures, and if they want to be on their own, they can be on their own. It's not going to cause any problems. Is that not true?
Oh, you know, cats can struggle as well, and that's where, a picture's worth a thousand words, but a video's worth a million, and that's one of the launching points that I work with my client teams, whether they have a cat or a dog that seems to be struggling with being left alone, is, you know, just to get some basic baseline video, and we set up conditions, you know, that are ethical and safe, but let's see what's happening when they just walk out to the mailbox, and we'll run like a 30-second or a 1 or 2 minute video, leave together, come back and review the video. And cats do. They'll sit at the door and they'll howl. They're wondering where their family went if they're used to that being alone. Absolutely.
And I guess with dogs, we think of the destructive behaviors they might cause. But cats, I imagine, could be the same way. Does this lead, if a cat is really upset, separation anxiety, things like that, to destructive behavior using their claws or missing the litter box, things like that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, you really hit on two really important topics. And when we look at what we describe as a problem behavior in our dogs and cats, it's always a good launching point to rule out the medical. So, you know, make sure for, you know, all your listeners, if you have a pet that you observe is struggling, consult your veterinarians first. So one, they have it on file, you know, so that they are tracking what's happening with the pet in your life, so they can refer back to those records when you go back for wellness checkups as well. But check off the medical first, and you really hit the nail on the head. For cats, they might be missing the litter box. They might be scratching in areas that they might not have before. If there's multiple cats in the home, you might start to see some inter-cat behavior changes, you know, where the cats might be not getting along, might be, having more cat politics, so to speak. But this is where video can be really helpful. It's really good data.
Well, I know from all my years of working with Steve Dale that multiple cat households are a whole other story altogether. We could probably spend a whole other hour on, so I won't get too much into that here. We will talk about the adoptions that have taken place, oftentimes among first-time pet owners and things like that. You mentioned video, and it's such an amazing thing to be able to record just about everything in our lives now. But for the purposes of this, most of the issues are taking place when we're not really at home. So do you recommend for people that are having issues like this to try to figure out a way to get an in-home camera system or some way that they could try to capture what's going on when they're not around?
Yeah. But also to do it in a way that can be budget friendly, but also setting it up within the training and care plan, that's really easy launching point, not just for the owner, but also for the dog, that isn't setting the dog up to be so distressed that we could be seeing the dog harming themselves or rehearsing these separation anxiety-related behaviors. And, you know, a special shout-out to Steve Dale because he does so much great education out there, too. There's a big difference between, well, not a big difference, but there is a gray area, and this is where my job as a trainer comes on board. Are we dealing with teaching a slow acclimation process for our rescue puppy, adolescent dog, adult dog to be used to being left alone for, you know, short periods of time that we build up? Or are we really dealing with a dog that has separation anxiety, which in and of itself might need its own diagnosis and treatment plan? So bringing in the vet and potentially roping in, you know, someone that is a certified dog behavior consultant, or a board certified vet behaviorist that says, we need a diagnosis and treatment plan. This dog is injuring itself and damaging the home when being left alone. Then that's when we really build on a collaboration. Video is helpful. And one of the things that I kept doing with my own dogs during the pandemic was I would just take my iPhone. I would hit the camera, put it on video, flip the video screen so I could see myself. And I would just, I would lean it up against something in the room where my dogs couldn't get it. And I would hit record. And I would set them up either for my younger dog to be in a crate or my older dog being gated in a room. They would get their Kongs, all the delicious things. I would hit record and I would walk out to the garage. You know, I would pretend to go to work for a minute or two. And then I would come back in the house and I would review the video and just see what happened in that short amount of time. That was really helpful. But another big tip for your listeners is practice what's called supervised separation. So set up the conditions while also working with a trainer that advocates, you know, positive care and training, to say, you know what, I am just going to go do laundry and our dogs hear when we're home. That's supervised separation. No different than company coming over, but we gate our dogs somewhere else. The dog knows company's there. The dog can hear us laughing and moving around. But this is one way in for our dog to get used to being separated, whether it's, you know, positive crate training or just being shifted to another room. But they're like, oh, I could hear you doing laundry or doing dishes downstairs, but delicious things are happening up here. And that's one way in that I help my client teams, is to say, let's build up short duration separations. And then we're going to build on that to where, you know, we just walk to the end of the block and come back and review the video and see what happens as we build on the plan.
We're speaking with Laura Monaco Torelli. She's the founder and director of Animal Behavior Training Concepts. You can find her at lauramonacotorelli.com or follow her on Twitter at ABTConcepts. She's a great follow on social media, posting videos all the time, lots of helpful things. So Laura started getting into a little bit of ways to start treating and getting them used to a little bit of separation. But when we come back from the news, I want to go back to the beginning a little bit and figure out, how do we know for sure, of course, if the couch is torn apart when you get home or as soon as you walk outside the door, you hear howling as if the hounds have been released. But are there more subtle signs? Because I wonder if, like everything else in life, we want to catch this early. So lots more questions for Laura Monaco Torelli after we get a quick check of the news right now here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. We're here with you until 1 o'clock, still joined by Laura Monaco Torelli. She's the founder and director of Animal Behavior Training Concepts. Follow her on Twitter at ABTConcepts. Laura mentioned our own Steve Dale does tons of work in this area, lots of behavior help. You can hear Steve Sunday mornings, 5:30 to 6 a.m. He's also got a show not about pets from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sundays. And go to his blog at any time, stevedale.tv or stevedalepetworld.com, and find all of the blog posts and all the information Steve has, including lots of stuff often with Laura herself. So, Laura, as we're going into the news, I know you were telling us a little bit about ways to start getting the dog used to some separation, be at home, have them gated isolated in another room, get them used to not always being right next to you. But let's go back to the beginning and figure out, how do we know for sure? I know if the couch is torn up, if things are destroyed, oftentimes with our dog Bailey, we might walk in, and if we didn't put a shoe away, there's a shoe that's torn apart or something that, distracts, or that he takes it out on, I guess, basically. But could we have spotted that earlier on before it got to that? Are there things we should watch for that would let us know that, oh, this will become a problem if we don't start tackling this now? Are there subtle signs we need to watch for if maybe it's not as obvious right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Great point that really swings itself back to canine communication education, which is one of my launching points with my client teams that I work with, whether it's virtual or here in downtown Chicago, is to teach dog owners what dog body language is and what it looks like, so that they can, you know, see how dogs communicate in their environment and how it changes contingent on a new stimulus. So something as, you know, what we might think is simple is we go to our morning routine, right? So we wake up, the dog wakes up, we take him for a walk. But then when the dog comes back, it could be something as subtle as, you know, we grab our bag, we grab our keys, we start to pack up our briefcase, we, you know, grab our coffee mug, and all of a sudden our dog is avoiding us. They're kind of hanging at a distance in the other room. They're creating space as a coping strategy to say, you know, I'm not going to go in the crate, because if I go in the crate, I'm going to be left alone for X amount of time. So for your listeners to think about, while they work with, a wonderful certified trainer that advocates positive training, is to say, you know, how can we observe your dog's body language as early cues to us that they already know the context cues that they're about to be left alone? And how can we get ahead of it to start to teach positive games that all of these, small steps don't necessarily mean you're going to be left alone all the time? And I weave that into just everyday training exercises, coupled with, and this is another key thing to keep in mind, dogs are so smart. They're brilliant teachers for us as far as their family. So if we only turn on the white noise, we only turn on the radio, I usually have classical music or the nature channel or, talk radio playing in the background. But if I only turn that on just before I leave the house, I've seen some of my client team's dogs take that as a cue that they're about to be left alone, and they run and hide. They don't want to be gated to another room because now they know, well, you just put that white noise machine on and I'm going to be left alone. So looking for clear indications from the dog early, or maybe like you said, not so clear, is a way in for early intervention.
You talked about trying to, say, walk out of the house for a minute or two, pretend you're going to work, have some video rolling so you could see what happens immediately. Is it always generally immediately, or sometimes, if you do something to distract them, that's what we do at home. If we know way, and my dog Bailey, who's going to be 3 years old, our Bailey will be 3 years old in October, he definitely is worse with the separation anxiety now after the pandemic. He used to be really used to being home alone, and now when we walk in, he freaks out, and so we are going crazy now, making sure every door is closed, every shoe is put away, there's nothing he can chew on. Like you said, the classical music's on the television. If we know far enough in advance, we take a Kong, we fill it with cream cheese and treats and freeze it for like an hour so that he has something to work on for a while. And that does, I'll tell you that it's either that, or if we just realize we're leaving, we didn't do that, we get a greenie out and he loses his mind for the greenie and like doesn't seem to care at all that we're leaving, at least for those few minutes. I don't know what it is 5 minutes later. And so that's why I wonder, because we distract him at first, I don't know what's happening 20, 30 minutes, an hour later. Does it usually set in immediately if the dog is going to be very upset that you're gone?
Not necessarily. And, a dog that's stressed can still eat, just like, us as humans. Some of us are stressed and we can still eat.
I know all too well, yes.
some dogs wait till we come back home before we will provide them something to do as well. And this is where we as pet owners have to carefully navigate, while we're still dealing with the pandemic, slow acclimation to longer durations of being left alone. And if that means that it's in your budget to hire a trusted, pet care provider, someone that can, stop by like an hour or hour and a half after we leave, just to check on the dog, that the dog has met before, let them on a potty break, do some playtime, and then set the conditions up of being left alone again is good, or a trusted neighbor. But I say, why stop at one Kong? So when I leave, I have big ridgebacks, which you know, and I know Bailey. I met Bailey when Bailey was younger over in Steve's studio. Well, at the recording studio, yeah. where you were.
Sure.
But I don't stop at one Kong. So I have 3, 4, 5 big, large enrichment Kongs, and I'll put their kibble with a trail mix of treats. Sometimes I'll freeze a little bit of creamy peanut butter. But what works for my dogs, and this is very individual, so just, you know, what I'm making a suggestion isn't a blanket. It's going to work for every dog that's out there, because we're also dealing with, I'll give multiple Kongs under the conditions of, you know, now our younger dog is crated, but our older dog is gated in the bedroom while I do laundry or while I do chores around the house. So they can hear me, but they get to enjoy multiple Kongs. Another big tip is, if any of your listeners have a young puppy, and don't forget that your puppy needs their caloric intake increased as they're growing. And what I've also noticed too is that puppies can become more vocal or more jumpy, more mouthy, because they're just hangry. They're really hungry. So we need to help delineate, and this is where video is so valuable, and collaborating with our vet team. You know, is the dog in your care demonstrating the behaviors because they're young and growing and they're hungry, they just need, you know, more calories, or is there an underlying medical concern, or is it an adolescent dog that could be within their second fear period? So that's a pretty broad range. So it's hard enough to be a puppy. It's hard enough to raise a puppy, right? We've got our, what I joke about the 3 E's, we're excited, exhilarated, but we're exhausted. We have a puppy that's not house trained, that requires a lot of work. But even for adolescent dogs that are still maturing chemically and physically and socially, they're now heading into that potential second fear period, which is really broad on the early end to the middle part of their adolescence. And something could happen. There could be a loud construction noise. You know, some of my clients live in high-rises where there's construction, literally cranes right outside their window. And it was the perfect storm. You know, they left for work. The construction cranes along the river, along the Chicago River, they're just doing their job, but our dogs don't know that. So another part of having maybe like a video monitoring system is to see, you know, is it the stimulus of the construction or the L tracks or the CTA buses or, you know, all of these things are happening, and trying to really isolate, you know, is your Bailey calm up until maybe they hear the dog barking next door and then our dogs are having a conversation. Right. So my dog is barking at the dog that's barking next door, but maybe the neighbor in the building files a complaint. And that's a whole other stressor when, you know, clients are getting complaints from other people in the building and they might get fined and potentially evicted. So this is where a really important collaboration to help the dog owners and their dog make it through this hard time is, you know, really important. It's hard. It's hard.
We're speaking with Laura Monaco Torelli, the founder and director of Animal Behavior Training Concepts. Find her at lauramonacotorelli.com or on Twitter at ABTConcepts. So when we come back, let's say you did adopt a pandemic puppy and maybe you didn't exactly know what you were getting into, and now you've got to head back to work, or you're heading back to some sort of more normal life and your dog's going to be home alone and maybe the training wasn't what you should have done. What do you do now? Can we help fix these puppies and give them a better home life when people aren't around? We'll find out from Laura next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala back with you here, 720 WGN. A little bit more time with our friend Laura Monaco Torelli. She's a famed Chicago dog trainer. Been talking to us about ways to know what's going on with your puppy or your dog, finding out if they do have some form of separation anxiety. But Laura, the big question is, for a lot of people who are now starting to head back to work or heading back to some sense, maybe kids heading back to school, all these things, these puppies that and dogs who for a year and a half were around people all the time, now we're like, hey, where are you all going? Is there a way, can we correct this behavior and fix it and make it comfortable for them to spend longer periods home alone?
Well, you know, anything is possible. And, you know, just branching off of some of my earlier suggestions as well is, you know, first start to frame out now, before we really head back to work for the longer stretches leaving the home, what that schedule is going to look like. and slowly acclimate your younger, you know, dog, adolescent dog, foster dog, older dog, to what that schedule is going to look like over time. So if you're planning on, you know, getting up at 5 a.m., you have a busy household, you're busy juggling a lot in that household, and then you're out the door by 6:30, now's the time to start to get your new canine family member used to that schedule as well. Because when we think about training, you know, sometimes people think about, you know, well, I asked my dog to do something and they just need to do it, rather than how can I change the environment to help change the conditions for me and my dog to be successful? So for my dogs, when I was like, okay, I'm going to start to travel again, I'm going to start to be leaving the house more frequently, I would make sure that they pottied earlier, that they would eat earlier, that they would get nice, easy, slow sniff walks earlier in the morning so that they get healthy exercise, not exhaustive. I don't want an exhausted dog that's irritated. I want a healthy dog that gets a lot of good sniff time on their walks as well. And then slowly work them into, you know, working with your family. What's our work schedule going to look like? And what's our care plan for our dog? And making sure it's ethical, because we don't want a dog to be left alone from 0 hours a day to 5 hours a day in their first chunk. That's a big stretch, especially when our dogs are used to going out for bathroom breaks every hour or like 2 hours, and they're like, oh, I get to relieve myself more often. So maybe their house training schedule is going to change. So there's all these nuances to say, okay, what is our work schedule going to look like, and how can we acclimate our dog to do that? And again, if they need help, enlist the help of a certified trainer that advocates for positive care and training. Ask your veterinarian too. Bring them in on it and say, what are some recommendations that you have as well? Because our dogs are not going to be used to, you know, 0 to 5 hours right away. Maybe for some dogs, 5 hours in and of itself could be too long of a stretch, especially for a young puppy and a newly adopted dog that's like, wait, what's going on here? I'm used to having company more often.
So you can train them to do this, but it's going to take time, and you shouldn't expect it all at once. You shouldn't expect to just go back to work and life is normal and that puppy too, or dog, even an adult dog, I imagine. So my dog Bailey was not a puppy when this started. I mean, he was a year and a half ish.
Yeah.
So I feel like he'd already gotten really used to how life was, and then suddenly life changed. That can affect dogs too, right? An 8 year old dog who was very used to having 6-7 hours alone to himself, who suddenly spent a year and a half straight with people always in the house, probably won't exactly get used to the other way again right away, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, just like us as people, leaving our dogs for that stretch can be a little bit hard too, because we're used to being around them all the time. And, you know, when we think about some analogies for us getting back, you know, used to our work schedule, you know, we have to get back to getting used to being in a, you know, in the out-of-home office environment. We get back to a different eating schedule, right? So we may have been at home snacking all the time in between Zoom meetings, but now we're back at work, and it's a different setup. So, you know, think about being empathetic towards your dogs the way that you would hope for a little bit of flexibility when you head back to work from your coworkers or from your supervisor. Like, we're all getting used to a new normal here, but it takes time. Behavior change takes time. And another big tip is, you know, not to use aversives or punishment on a dog that's struggling. You know, so if the dog is avoiding going into the crate, you know, shoving the dog in the crate, you know, pushing the dog in the crate, scaring the dog to being, you know, gated into another area, punishing the dog for destroying parts of the home that we define is not appropriate for the dog, though, you know, did. That's only going to exacerbate their anxiety. So, you know, don't reach for that branch of wanting to use punishment, because that could have some detrimental fallout.
Well, I've definitely heard Steve Dale talk about this for years, and basically it seems it comes down to, that's our natural reaction, right, is to get upset and get mad, just like we would at each other as humans. But the dog's not going to figure that out. But they'll figure out when you're happy with them. So positive reinforcement with everything you possibly can, right?
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Thank you for bringing that up. Because if we walk in the door and we glance over and we just see something destroyed or something that our dog, you know, chewed on, and we immediately yell at the dog, grab the object, you know, and start to make bad choices, you know, like I won't even say some of the bad things that I've heard that have been done. The dog is learning that us coming home is a predictor of bad things. So now the dog is going to be more anxious. So when they hear the key turning, when they see us walk in, and then commonly what I'll hear is, well, but the dog looked guilty. The dog knew right away what they did was wrong. Well, actually, the dog has learned that when you come home, they're going to get yelled at, potentially scared or hit, like, you know, bad decisions from us as dog owners that are just teaching our dogs to be scared when we come home. We don't want that in a relationship either.
Well, no, because it's basically like when we grew up and our moms would say, you wait till your father gets home, and then we'd sit there scared to death until dad came home. It was terrible.
Exactly. So us yelling at our dog for destroying the shoes or for chewing on the couch isn't teaching the dog not to chew on the shoes or on the couch, because we don't know when they did that. You know, it's not paired with the timing. They're just learning, you came home, and now I'm scared. So they're going to hide, and they're going to show what we describe and label as guilty behavior. Dogs don't demonstrate guilt the way that we define it as humans. They're giving us clear communication and canine communication that there's an aversive or punishing association with us. So now they're tucking their tail, they're trembling, they're hiding behind the couch to avoid the punishment. So it's a very clear dialogue of dog communication, because now they're scared of the person that might, you know, keep yelling at them when they come home.
Yeah.
It's hard to be a dog sometimes. So that's why we want to make it, you know, fun for the dog, but also for us, because we love our dogs.
Well, it's supposed to be a great relationship. They give us this unconditional love. We don't want to have to be mad at them or have these moments with them. We just want to be able to enjoy them. So the better we can do to put them in a good place, the better the reward's going to be for everybody. You mentioned crate training, and we haven't really talked about that much here. We have mentioned gating off into other rooms, but crate training itself, having a kennel, which is often recommended for a puppy to start out as a way to learn, especially with potty training and things like that, but also when they're teething at night, to have them have a place to stay where they're not going to get out and tear the house apart when they don't know any better, all those things. Is it too late to crate train a dog if you've already had it for a year, or can you slowly but surely still do that?
Oh, such a great question. You know, crate training isn't for every dog, no more than people enjoy being in enclosed areas more than others. And so, you know, if we have, you know, a young puppy or an older dog, what I do coach my client teams to provide is a variety. So we might have like a appropriate dog pen with the crate in it, and then we'll start to see where does the puppy or the dog, you know, young adolescent dog or older dog, show us that they want to go that's more comfortable for them. Now, some dogs, some puppies do wonderful with crate training under the plan of it starting from a very positive place. But for some dogs, being confined in a crate, especially if it's a dog who maybe is a recent rescue, is an older dog who's learning history, we don't know, to just pop them in a crate and expect them to be comfortable is a tall ask. And it could really put the dog and the owners in a very stressful situation. My younger dog loves his crate. My older dog is no longer crated, but I do have, when they're younger puppies, kitty pens as well. And then just to kind of get a feel for, with the training, like a little bit every day, you know, like a couple minutes here or there, of doing a little bit of front crate training, leave the crate door open, see if they go in there to want to find some of their enrichment toys to play with, but they can go in and out. That's a tell. If I see my dogs choosing to go in the crate to take naps during the day, they have access. For some dogs, though, it might be stressful, and that's where slow and steady wins the race, you know, versus just putting them in there. I also make sure that when my younger dog is crated, that he doesn't have any clothes on. You know, he is naked. Because if they're grooming, I want to make sure, you know, that he doesn't get his paw stuck in his collar. He doesn't chew on his tags. He doesn't choke on the collar. Take the harness off. You know, we don't want them to get wrapped up or injured. Or if it's a crate that has like an open bottom, the equipment could get stuck on that. And then we have a dog panicking because now they have an entanglement issue in the crate. And that's a whole other issue that can happen as well.
If you want more help, if you need some help, find her at LauraMonicoTorelli.com. She's the founder and director of Animal Behavior Training Concepts. You can also follow her on Twitter at ABT Concepts. It's never too late to train your dog, or I guess, Laura, a little bit you'd say ourselves, into how we should correctly be handling things. We really appreciate you coming on the phone with us tonight. Have a great weekend.
Oh, you too, Matt. Thank you so much for having me.
And also don't forget our favorite pet guy, Steve Dale. He's on Sunday mornings from 5:30 to 6, and you can find him at stevedale.tv, where his blog always has information. He talks to Laura all the time, too, and has great behavior and training tips and all sorts of things. So make sure to check out our buddy Steve Dale. That's it for the Matt Bubala Show tonight. You can follow us on social media at Matt Bubala on Twitter and Instagram, and like the Matt Bubala Show on Facebook. We'll see you soon. Have a great night, everybody. Jim Bohannon's up next.